yeah. What's going on, DMV? You know who it is. Youngest in Charge Movement. Linnell Willingham here with you live and local on 106.7 The Fan. And always streaming live nationally on the always free Odyssey app. Ride with me as I take you up to 10 o'clock here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. Boy, do we have a ton to get to. Commanders practice was closed to the media this afternoon. We'll be back out there tomorrow. Coming up, top of the 7 o'clock hour, I will give you a wall-to-wall recap of what I got to bear witness to yesterday out in Ashburn, the first annual Burgundy and Gold team scrimmage. It was a situation where it's the first team offense getting to go up against first team defense, and then the backups get to lock horns as well. They stay in training camp. A lot of the times, with certain things, you can't really take a whole bunch away. I will say this about the Burgundy and Gold team scrimmage that went down yesterday in Ashburn. I can take a lot away from it. Some good, some not so good. We'll touch on it all as we roll throughout the program. We'll also give you the latest on Terry McLaurin and where he stands in terms of his pursuit of a long-term contract extension with the Washington Commanders. John Keim of ESPN hopped on with our pal Kevin Sheehan on our sister station, the Team 980, and gave a little bit of insight. Plus, one of the young bulls out there on social media that I'm going to give some love to, my guy Matthew Heiserman. Matthew Heiserman with just some absolutely jaw-dropping numbers, some eye-opening numbers is what I'll say. When it comes to Terry McLaurin and just how productive he actually was last year to the Washington Commanders. We have a couple of guests stop by as well. Chris Russell going to join us at 8:15. He was also out there at the team scrimmage. We'll get his thoughts. Also, 9 o'clock hour, we're bringing out the heavy hitter. Every time JLC blesses this program, our Odyssey NFL insider, Jason Lockenfora, going to join us at 9:15. We'll get his perspective and his insider information on the latest with Terry McLaurin and the Commanders. Plus, we'll take a spin around the National Football League. So make sure you keep it locked here on The Fan all throughout the show here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. Also, last tease here. Also, we finally buried the hatchet. If you've seen it on social media, there's GIFs, there are pictures. Myself and the big fella, Laramie Tunsil, had an exclusive one-on-one interview after the Burgundy and Gold team scrimmage that took place yesterday. We will play you that audio and we'll get you up to speed as to how me and Laramie Tunsil even became a thing. But super excited to get to that. We'll get to that at about 8 o'clock. So make sure you keep it locked right here on The Fan. We had some big Commanders news this afternoon for you uniform junkies out there. They announced their uniform schedule for the 2025 season. And if you follow me on social media, and you have to, if you don't, what are you doing? It is at N-E-L-L underscore B-T-P. If you follow me on social media and you've read some of my tweets from today, there is one uniform in particular that I don't care if they bring back the Super Bowl era uniforms permanently. I don't care if they bring back the old burgundy permanently. There is one uniform that Josh Harris and company would be absolute fools for parting ways with. Now, here is the jersey schedule. In the season opener, at home, Northwest Stadium against the New York Giants, they're wearing what they call the Monument White uniforms. That's just the traditional white that we have seen from this team since the beginning of this rebrand. They'll wear those in week one against the Giants, weeks four and five against the Falcons and Chargers. They'll bring them back in week number eight on Monday night against Kansas City. They'll wear them in Madrid. And this actually makes me want to vomit. They're going to wear them in Madrid. Week 11 against the Dolphins. You'll see them week 14 against the Minnesota Vikings. You'll see them week 15 on the road at MetLife against the Giants. And then you'll see them in the regular season finale, week 18 against the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's just put this out on the record too, by the way. Those Monument White uniforms, yuck. The worst uniform that this team has right now is the Monument White. The burgundy that they went to during the rebrand. We'll see that five different times this year as well. Week two, Thursday Night Football in Lambeau against the Packers. You'll see it in week three against the Vegas Raiders. You'll see it in week seven against the Dallas Cowboys. Again in week 10 with your rematch of the divisional round against Detroit. And then finally, you'll see them in week 16 against the Philadelphia Eagles. So we know when the Super Bowl era uniform is going to be worn. The new throwback that everyone loves. It should be their permanent white uniform moving forward. We'll see that week 9 against Seattle, week 13 against Denver, week 17 against Dallas, and then week 6, Monday Night Football, here in the nation's capital, a rematch of probably the most replayed game from 2024, the Hail Maryland, as I officially like to call it. We'll get to see those battle black uniforms in week 6 against Caleb Williams and the Bears, and that's it. Only one game in the battle black uniforms. And for your boy, I'm distraught, heartbroken, feel like I've been led astray. That is the best uniform, and I say it all the time. I know you all disagree with me. And I know Danny Ruye is in the car right now rolling his eyes. I love the battle black uniform. It is my favorite Commander's uniform, and it's honestly one of the best uniforms in all of the National Football League when you think about the matte black helmet, the sleek look that it has, right? The location of the jersey patch on the side. Like, everything about the battle black is what I like about this Commander's uniform. And the fact that it's only being worn once, I'm feeling like it's starting to get phased out, and I'm not happy about it.
Do you not gripe with the logo in the front of the helmet?
I don't care. It looks beautiful.
I was just thinking, though, the potential is there. If you have the black helmet, you could actually put the stripe on the helmet kind of like they're doing with the Super Bowl era and then either go with the W or whatever if there's a logo that's introduced in the future.
Here's the thing about the Battle Blacks. They have nothing to do with the Super Bowl era. The Battle Blacks is for us.
It is a new thing.
And the youngest in charge movement, that's what the Battle Blacks are for. My first ever Redskins jersey that I had purchased for me, my Aunt Vicky, shout out to you, LaRon Landry, Dirty 30, in all black. And it took me like a year and a half to grow out of it because I was at the time where I was consistently growing. And you all are probably thinking, you're still growing, aren't you? No, I'm not. But the battle black, man, like the fact that like the DC flag is on it with the, like, it embodies everything that the nation's capital stands for. I know the historians out there are going to be all up in arms saying, oh, black is not a part of our color scheme. We look like the Steelers. I could care less. This black uniform is unique. It's different, and there's nothing like it. I just got a text. Arizona State Sun Devils' third alternate jerseys. That's from Danny Ruye. So, yes, I know people don't like it, but I'm completely heartbroken about the fact that it seems like they're doing away with it.
You know, I'm not even as mad as you are about the battle black away one time. It's more, I like how Danny just said Arizona State. I'm already 8 times we are the Arizona Cardinals.
Well,
the white jersey, the monument white, is an Arizona Cardinals jersey.
But here's the thing. It's never going, like, after this year, and maybe I'm wrong on this, and there's some sort of protocol that I'm not privy to.
But what if they bring the battle black just as a jersey? You only wear it against the Bears, no matter what.
That's crazy, though.
But it'd be really funny. It'd be a great bit.
You don't play the Bears every year. I think they're doing the ultimate troll job by wearing it against them. And cool.
Yeah, it's a bit.
Can I put my hands together, and I'm looking up at the sky?
Preacher Willingham?
Pastor Willingham. This is not a big enough event.
I know.
Pastor Willingham.
Pastor Willingham's coming soon, isn't he?
Oh, you may hear him at the 7 o'clock hour.
Oh, my.
But,
no way.
But this was not something big enough to where Pastor Willingham would be all up in arms about it. But what I feel about the Battle Blacks is I'm more so sad because them only wearing it once, it leads me to believe maybe we've seen the last of the Battle Blacks. Now, next year, I fully expect the Super Bowl era alternate that we're wearing this year. I expect that to be the home uniform next year. And then next year, hopefully, they introduce the old burgundy jerseys as the alternate, and we keep the battle black. But I want to hit the phones on this at 1-800-636-1067. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. It's a two-parter for you. Should the team continue to wear the battle black uniforms after the 2025 season? And then here's the second part. What is your least favorite uniform that the Washington Commanders currently have? Is it the Battle Black? I know no one's going to say the Super Bowl era. Is it the Monument White? Or is it, what do they call the Legacy Burgundy?
Oh, the ketchup and mustard.
What's the least favorite to you? 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll get Mark and Largo to chime in here real quickly before we hit the break. Mark, what's going on?
To be honest with you, I'm with you, man. I love the Battle Black.
About time.
I'm not gonna lie. They were 2-0 with those jerseys last year, and I'm with you on that. The least one I kind of hate. I hate the ones from the early 70s that they changed in the late 70s, early 80s. I kind of hate those compared to how they made them look a little bit better and stuff like that. I love the Battle Black, though. I'm with you on that. I love the Battle Black. Oh, and by the way,
for you to be an older fan saying that you like the Battle Black, you get some kudos from your boy, Mark.
Now, I got to say this,
I already know.
I owe you an apology for something because I said that you were trying to do a bit, and I kind of give you some credit. I hope you continue a conversation about the Terry and what's going on.
Oh, we're going to get to it.
And I heard that him and Jade have been practicing when nobody has been around.
We're going to address that as well before we get out of here, Mark. I appreciate you as always. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. The Battle Black uniforms only being worn one time next year for the Washington Commanders. Should the team continue to wear the Battle Blacks? And then, what is your least favorite Washington Commanders uniform that's currently in rotation? Your calls on that next on The Fan. +1 800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at @NELL_BTP. Taking you up to 10 o'clock tonight here on this Wednesday night edition of OT. We will get into my thoughts and analysis from the Burgundy and Gold team scrimmage yesterday. We'll do that top of the 7 o'clock hour. Terry McLaurin also was out on the practice field. He was captured in 4K by our guy Grant Paulson having a good conversation with the GM of the Commanders, Adam Peters. What does that mean relative to this extension? Plus, Jeremy Fowler joined G&D on Monday. And what do you know? Gave a percentage chance on what he thinks is most likely to happen with Terry McLaurin, whether or not he plays in week one or not. We'll let you hear from Jeremy Fowler coming up as well. Right now, though, Uniform Gate is in full swing for the Washington Commanders. They released their uniform schedule for the 2025 season. And to the chagrin of many, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but if you're a part of the Youngest in Charge movement, you love the Battle Black uniforms. You'll only see that uniform combo once next year for the Washington Commanders. So the question is this. Should the team continue to wear the Battle Blacks? And the two-parter, to give you a voice, what is your least favorite Washington Commanders uniform that's currently in rotation? 1-800-636-1067. For me, it's the crusty white uniforms. The Monument White is what they're being called. They look terrible. They're not a good look. We look like Danny Ruiz complains. We look like Arizona State. We look like the Arizona Cardinals wearing the Monument White uniform. But something light here to kick off the show at 1-800-636-1067. Dez is in Marlow Heights. Wants to chime in. What's up, Dez?
What's up, Linero? Hey, look.
What's going on, man?
I don't know what's going on. If Josh Harris need to get some flavor or something, you need to go down there and talk to Dougie P and B. Mitch. Like you said, man, first of all, I love those Battle Black uniforms.
I'll take it a step further, too. I think it was the most purchased uniform last year for the Commanders.
It was.
Most purchased jersey.
Everybody had those, bruh. Yeah. I was sitting down watching the game with my girl on the 65-inch when he threw that touchdown. I was in so much distraught before that play happened. I was like, man, we going through some more Commanders nonsense where we had the game and we could have won it, but we let it go. And he just brought it through for us. You cannot get rid of that. But number two, bruh, them white jerseys are trash. They've been terrible since the first day they released them. I don't know why we are wearing those more than every other uniform. And those are the worst jerseys that we have. Like, I know they're not selling. I know they're not selling. That's probably why they're doing it, because they're not selling. Or we playing too many home games, I mean, away games with teams with red uniforms or something. I don't know.
It's going to be very interesting to see if they listen to what people think, because, Des, I think the money speaks for it. It's the most purchased uniform in rotation right now, so they would be a fool to leave it out of rotation. Des, I appreciate you as always, man. 1-800-636-1067. Edwin is in Silver Spring. Wants to chime in. Edwin, are you upset about the Battle Blacks only being worn once?
Absolutely not. I'm tired of all these gimmicky jerseys. First of all,
it's a gimmick.
They are. I mean, they exist basically to sell merch for the NFL. That's pretty much it. I mean, and you're saying it's the highest selling and all that. It's the highest selling because
the other one
changed
stink.
Our name, like changed our name and colors several times in the last few years. So I mean, there's no affinity or loyalty to anything, you know, that's out there right now. So I mean, this is I was about to use a term that might be.
Well, don't get dumped.
That might be politically incorrect. It's the best of a weak bunch, you know.
Yeah, I definitely agree with it, man. What's your least favorite? Is that your least favorite then too?
Yes, it is my least favorite. I just feel like, especially for home games, if I'm going to a game, you know, I want to see us in our classic colors. I mean, it takes away from the experience for me. You know, it spoils it a bit. I'll be upset if I got tickets for a home game. Went to the game and then they're wearing the all black. I'll just, you know.
Hey, look.
It'll sour it a bit for me.
This is the beautiful part about Sports Talk Radio. I completely disagree with you, but I respect the take, brother. I'm going to get you a black uniform one day. One day, I'm going to make sure you have your own Edwin customized battle black jersey. What's up, though? What'd you got?
Yeah. You ever watched Next Friday?
Of course, brother.
Okay, I'm about to make a Next Friday illusion.
Okay,
Linnell, you're the little brother that's bigger than the big brother.
Okay. I feel that. I dig it. Edwin, we appreciate it, though. We got a bunch more calls to get to. 1-800-636-1067. We're going to keep this rolling as we ease our way into the 7 o'clock hour. Coming up other side of the break, I will give you my wall-to-wall analysis of what went down yesterday in Ashburn during the Burgundy and Gold team scrimmage. Plus, we'll continue to take your calls. The uniform rotation has been dropped for 2025. One game in the Battle Blacks, should they continue to wear it? And then what's your least favorite Commander's uniform? Your call's next. Boy, are the tweets coming in about uniform gate for the Washington Commanders. You're tapped in to the youngest in Charles and L. Willingham. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock here on this Wednesday night edition of OT. You can keep the conversation going with me on social media. It is at @NELL_BTP. I want to read a couple of tweets. My guy Sean tweets at me and says, imagine the battle black with yellow numbers and red trim with the old school font. Yeah. That's what Lil Top just said. That's what Ben just said. Imagine the old uniforms. You can put the stripe on the helmet. I would be down for that. Somebody tweeted at me earlier and said, yeah, bro, when I play Madden, I sometimes wear the black uniforms with the burgundy pants. That's trifling. Not something I would be on board for, but I get it. My guy Ace Squared tweets at me and says, I hate those ashy monument white uniforms. The battle blacks are fire. And look, A Square looks like he's a little bit older, so not in the youngest in charge. Y'all just have good taste, bro. That's how I look at it. Anybody that looks at the Battle Blacks and goes, "Yeah," you're probably if you look at the Battle Blacks and go, "Yeah," you're probably Charles Barkley's stunt double and is the funniest guy I've ever heard in stand-up in my life.
It's just being stuck up, though, I feel like, because, you know, a lot of the conversations that surround this franchise with the logo, name, or whatever, I get how people feel about that. But if the uniform is so important that you can't even like try something new eventually, and this is a new era of Washington football. This is not the 1980s. This is not Dan Snyder being here. It's a completely new era of Washington football. So something new, it kind of makes sense. And they're getting a younger generation of fans in it. Young kids like the jerseys.
Young kids love the jerseys.
And that's important to Josh Harris and them. Because they care about that.
You know what? Money. 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 Money.
It talks.
Cash rules everything around me. So I'm going to go out on a limb here, make a bold prediction. Shocker, right? Linnell, bold prediction. Never happens. I don't think the black uniforms are going anywhere. And if you want them to, because they're not. That was, and I got to double check the numbers, but I saw it on social. Man, it was the highest selling uniform or jersey last year for Washington. Josh Harris, the company, would be fools to get rid of it. And I know they're about their paper, and they understand it. So I don't see it going anywhere. But what say you, though? 1-800-636-1067. The Battle Blacks only being worn in week 6 on Monday night against the Bears. After that, we won't see it maybe forever. Should they continue to wear the Battle Blacks after this year? And then what's your least favorite Commanders uniform currently in rotation? Let's go to, I got Tyler in Richmond. What's going on, Ty guy?
What's going on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, brother. How you doing? What do you think, man? Social media is in a frenzy over this.
All right, so here's what I got. I love the Battle Black. I hate the Monument White, and the reason why I don't like the Monument White is because you can barely see the numbers. And the last point I got. Make sure you talk about the Nationals winning, because it doesn't happen that often.
Tyler, I got you, brother. I appreciate you calling it as always. Yeah, Nats were victorious today, and they were victorious because of the bullpen of all folks coming up big for the Curly W's. Jose Ferrer, in credit for the win, but yeah, the Nationals are just so irrelevant. Our guy Maurice in D.C. tweets at us and says, you don't have to be young to appreciate the Battle Blacks. You just have to have taste in style, got to get an updated jersey. Mo, I'm on board with you, man. I'm on board with you. I got Patty Sharp tweets at me and says, Linnell, I'm an old-timer, and I love the black uniforms. I think they're cool, and as a D.C. native, I really like the D.C. flag and burgundy and gold accents. Of course, I love the Super Bowl-era throwbacks. I like the current burgundy jersey with gold pants. Don't like the current white. I think we're all on board with that. Those monument white jerseys, and let me find the tweet. He called them ashy. That may have been the best tweet of the night. Calling those uniforms ashy, because, yeah, they are ashy. I'm not a big fan of them at all. And I keep going back to the fact that that's what sold last year. That is what got rang up the most at the Commanders team shop or online or wherever, was that Battle Black uniform. So I am, honestly, I don't think they're going to take it out of rotation. The only reason I brought it up is because, well, they're only wearing it one time this year. And I'm going to go back to the spread here of this. They're wearing them damn monument white uniforms 8 different times. 8 of the 17 games, we're going to see that trash jersey. So here's the thing. You know what would make me like the monument white a little bit more? Can they mix it up and wear it with the yellow pants every now and then? Like, that's something that maybe would get me intrigued about it. My good guy, Juke, out in West Virginia. What's going on, bro? I already know you're a fan of the Battle Blacks, right?
Oh, yeah. And look, you call it Battle Blacks. I call them the Dark Knights.
Come on now.
Ain't nothing sweet about it. We coming to beat the brakes off people like Batman. You know what I mean?
Yes, come on sir. Now.
So, yeah, Dark Knights. And then, I'm with everybody else. I don't like the Monumental Whites. Let's get rid of those and put the Super Bowl era uniforms in permanent rotation.
Yeah.
And keep the Dark Knights as alternate. That's all I got.
I think that may happen next year, Jupe. And I appreciate the call, Jupe. If you're sticking around. After this, we're going to get into what I saw yesterday at the joint practice, and I know a lot of you have been tweeting at me. First of all, I absolutely am flattered by the positive comments that I get on social media. You all appreciate the practice recap. I'll continue to do it for you each and every day that I'm out there. I'm back out there tomorrow for an 11:30 practice, so you'll have another recap coming your way. But right now, trying to get to the bottom of uniform gate. Where do the people who matter fall on the side of this Washington Commanders uniform debate? 8 times we're going to see the monument white uniforms next year. 5 times we'll see the legacy burgundy uniforms. Obviously, those 3 games, we're going to see the Super Bowl era uniforms. I honestly can't wait for it. During the entire rebrand, I used to get on folks about, do you care more about winning or do you care about what they're wearing? Now that we're winning, I think it's appropriate to really care about what the team is wearing. Them Super Bowl era uniforms, boy, I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. The other thing I love too, and maybe this doesn't move you all the way that it moves me, the players in the black uniform, that's when the players look the swaggiest. That's when the players don the most drip. You know what I'm saying? Mikey Sanders still. Look, he's pictured on the damn joint. He's pictured on the flyer here to try and promote the Battle Black. He going double black sleeves, dark visor. There is so much aura. Let me tell you when I first realized the Battle Blacks couldn't be messed with. It was the preseason finale last year. I think it was against New England. And Jaden was wearing them joints in pregame, low socks. Ah!
Nah, you know what it was? It's when Jaden posted on Instagram like the week before the season where he had the tinted visor.
Come on, man.
I was like, wait a second. All the comments were like, wait, these uniforms are actually tough. And I guess it's because the quarterback looks good in
it. Has some aura in it. Sam Howell, love you, Slinging Sammy, but you couldn't.
You remember the narrative that surrounded the black uniforms the first 2 years said they're 0-5 in those uniforms. I was like, what is their record in every uniform?
Exactly.
They're not winning any games, period. It's not the uniform's fault.
A guy, Athens in Annapolis, tweets at me and says, no way, this is the tweet that I choose to read from Athens. Are you going to the game with me and Max? I'll be working, Athens. So, no, probably won't be at the game with you. I want to hear Athens' take on the uniform gate. He is like one of our representatives for the Oldest in Charge movement. I got Big Trill. My main man tweets at me and says, the Monument white joints are by far the worst, but I feel like if they wear them with the white pants, they wouldn't be that bad. You spot on. But here's the thing, brother. Do they have white pants? They do.
Yeah, they do.
You wear them in a crisp all-white look, I could get down with that. I judge the uniforms based on how the players dress in them, if I'm being honest. I need to see aura. I need to see drip. As a high school football player, college football player, that was my favorite. Thursday night before a Friday night kickoff in Montgomery County, you couldn't get me to go to bed. I'm up ironing my arm sleeve. I'm crinkling my socks. I'm doing everything you could possibly do to make sure I look good as we get our ass whipped 56-0.
What'd you think of the burgundy on burgundy look that they brought out last year?
I'm a fan of it. I suffer from SLS, though, when it comes to the all burgundy look, scoring lover syndrome. Because throughout our childhood, Ben, whenever they wore it, they got thraxed in the all burgundies. Remember the swinging gate game? The swinging gate game where they decide to fake punt on Monday night against the Giants?
No.
That was in the all burgundy. Pittsburgh came in here and put belt to ass in the all burgundy in week one when Kirk was the starter on Monday night. So I suffer from scoring lover syndrome when it comes to this.
That's why we had such a epiphany for the white on white.
Yes.
Because like the 05, 07 Joe Gibbs 2.0 teams that wear white on white toward the end of the season. I think they throttled the Cowboys on Christmas Eve or something like that. Cooley had 3 touchdowns that day.
I also remember the all-white game where
Sean Taylor leaped into the end zone to clinch a playoff spot after Philip Daniels knocked the ball out.
The blocked field goal that ends up happening, ends up winning that way. I think that was during 07 when they were battling to make the playoffs. But what say you, though? Will in Alexandria wants to chime in. Will, are you a fan of the Battle Blacks? Do you want them to go away? And then what's your least favorite uniform currently in rotation?
Thanks for taking my call,
for
man.
Sure, man.
I like the Blacks. I'm a big soccer fan, though,
okay.
So I liken it to sort of the third jersey there, where you always have a standard home and away, but the third jersey changes each year to kind of crazy colors that would never match.
I can dig that.
Now, in soccer, sort of the understanding is like that jersey changes every single year, so there isn't like the attachment, I'd say, to trying to sort of bring it back year after year. I like the Blacks. Maybe something crazy happens in the game this year and, like, you know, the fan base kind of goes behind the jersey and it becomes more of a thing.
Yeah.
But I do agree that it sort of drifts from the traditional uniform here. But interestingly, the jersey that I dislike the most is the all burgundy, simply because the burgundy is not burgundy.
It's not. Yeah.
It's like a red thing that, you know, doesn't pull at my heartstrings in terms of the old jersey. I love what they're going to do next year in terms of the Super Bowl throwback. But that's just sort of my two cents in terms of, like, fan attachment relative year over year.
For sure. You know
but
what
I
I'm
do
glad
think
about?
It's silly to have a jersey that you wear once.
Right. And the thing that I love about this, and I used to sound like an old man with this, I used to get so upset when the rebrand first happened, and people were like, oh, I hate these uniforms, because what matters more? Uniforms are winning. But, Will, we win now, so the uniforms can matter. John is in Upper Marlboro. What's going on, John?
What's up, brother? How you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Yeah, I was just saying, even the all white jerseys would be fine if it's in your third football like they used to.
And it actually got dirty.
At the end of the day, they'd be all filthy anyway. They'd be all black, all brown anyway. Now they got these boo boo rules, whatever. But yeah, when I had the all black Clinton Porter jersey, they was on it. And, I mean, everybody was asking me where I got it from. I wouldn't tell them.
Hey, man, look, I feel like everybody had one of them remix black jerseys. We've all been there before. Al is in Arlington to wrap us up here. What's up, Al?
All right, Linnell. I want to sound like a total old man. I hate them all.
Okay? Oh, no. Okay. Explain why.
Because I'm a traditionalist. Because I grew up in the Super Bowl era. But putting that aside, mm-hmm. the black ones aren't bad. But I'm gonna put a pin into your theory here about uh-huh. them bringing the old school throwback whites as the permanent next year. If I recall correctly, and you have to look this up, mm-hmm. the current white jersey has black trim in it. If you look closely,
okay, yes, I'm about to pull it up right now.
Yes, and that's required to have that alternate black jersey. Look that up.
Black trim on it. So the stripe.
That's why it doesn't look traditional. That's why it looks Arizona-ish. It's got that black in it, and that allows them to have the third black jersey.
Hmm.
So, problematic. It may be going away. I hear you. You want me to get even deeper down the rabbit hole of why you see these ugly white ones more
mm-hmm.
is because I think they're going the Wizards route, where they're going to minimize the name Commanders. They're not going to change it.
Uh-huh.
They're going to minimize. Like how we have D.C. Mm-hmm. or Washington on the front of the Wizards jerseys that, guess what, look a lot like the old Bullets jerseys.
Right. Okay. Al, see what I'm talking? That's what you call an investigative radio caller. Al, I appreciate you as always, man. Enjoy the rest of the evening, brother. 1-800-636-1067. When we come back, we'll get into the X's and O's. I know you all have been waiting for it. My recap of yesterday's burgundy and gold scrimmage comes your way next here on The Fan. One 800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. You're tapped into the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham. We'll take you up to 10 o'clock. Chris Russell going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour, final hour of Power. We're going to get into a big picture look at the National Football League and recap everything that you saw in week number one of the preseason. Including Shedeur Sanders, man. I know we talked about it a little bit over the weekend. You want to talk about a young man making the most of his opportunity. He did just that. And I'm honestly proud of the young man. I know he's gotten a lot of scrutiny throughout the draft process about who he is and, you know, how much he loves football and how invested he is. I think you saw on Friday night the preparation clearly is there, and he clearly looks like a bona fide NFL quarterback in this league. We'll see what type of opportunity he gets down the line. Jason Lockenfour going to join us in that 9 o'clock hour, too, and we'll get his thoughts on the debut of Shedeur, and we'll also get his thoughts on Terry Gate, as I'm now calling it. Let's get to what happened yesterday. First ever burgundy and gold inter-squad scrimmage. Really good idea. I think they needed it to get the blood flowing a little bit. Thought it was pretty competitive, kinda. My biggest takeaway from Washington's inter-squad scrimmage is this offense, it's got some work to do. I don't want to make any sweeping declarations or proclamations about what I saw, but they definitely struggled. In particular, they struggled, the first team offense, really struggled to get anything going. I mean, they struggled to get a yard at times. And mind you, like I said last segment, you're without Brandon Coleman, right? Some plays you were without Laremy Tunsil. As Trent Scott was getting some work with the first team at left tackle, Tunsil's got, his hand just looks ridiculous. It's something that he's played with and played throughout his career with, so we'll see whether it caused him to miss time. I don't think it will. But, you know, Trent Scott got some reps yesterday. So you were you were really working with an offensive line of Laremy Tunsil, Andrew Wiley at left guard, Tyler Biadasz at center. Gosh, who was there? Nick Allegretti at right guard. And then it was Josh Connerly Jr. at the right tackle spot. That offensive line was under siege, is the best way that I can describe it. Jayden Daniels was under siege. In all of the training camp practices that I went to last year, all of the training camp practices that I've been at this year, this was the worst I've seen Jayden Daniels look. What does that mean? In reality, a whole bunch of nothing. And I'll get to the caveat with the offense that we, you know, need to discuss here. But let's call a spade a spade. There was a lot of quick pressure from the interior on the perimeter. And then when there wasn't quick pressure, it just felt like the timing of this offense was off. That's what happens when you've got guys on the perimeter that take forever to win. Jayden's got to hold it and tap, 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 tap. Can't get to the top of his drop and just let it go. You've got to hold it and wait for guys to uncover and make themselves available to you. The starting wide receiver unit that we saw each and every time they went out there, it's Luke McCaffrey on the outside. It is Jalen Lane on the other outside. And then it's Deebo Samuel working in the slot. And Lane and Samuel switched between outside and slot a couple of different times. It felt like, first of all, let me just say this. I can count on one hand that went further than 5 yards. Downfield, air yards, right? Jayden Daniels started like 1 for 6 for like 3 yards. His only completion was to Zach Ertz early on. Right, he had a completion to Deebo, but Mikey's right there. Would have been a tackle, we assume. But that's where it's like hard to judge it, because Mikey Samuels still versus Deebo Samuel in the open field. Like, if they do that 10 times, I think Deebo's going to win 6 out of the 10 times, 7 out of the 10 times. So it's hard, right? I don't want to fully overreact and fully throw a bunch of fire everywhere. But my overall takeaway is, like, this offensive unit is going to rely a lot on Jayden Daniels. And my problem is, you didn't trade for Laremy Tunsil. You didn't trade for Deebo Samuel. You didn't draft Josh Connerly Jr. to put more on Jayden Daniels' plate. You did that to, in my mind, ease the burden of responsibility for him throughout the year. And I get what everyone's going to say. Well, the best quarterbacks in this league make everyone else around them better. I firmly believe he's one of those guys. I firmly believe he's got the ability to make others better. Look at last year. Career year for Olamide Zaccheaus. Tremendous year for Noah Brown. Career renaissance for Zach Ertz. So he does make guys better, but the iteration of this offense we saw yesterday in Ashburn, if they have to roll that out in week number one, woof. Be very, very difficult for me to have a bunch of confidence in them beating the Giants. Straight up. Now, the one thing that I keep saying, and I said it in the practice recap, if you got the chance to tap in with that on social media, it's hard to fully gauge where this offense is at right now as we sit here on August the 13th, because we're not seeing Jayden Daniels be able to run and scramble. We're not seeing really even the full impact of the traditional running game, because it's thud. Guys aren't getting taken down and wrapped up and taken to the turf. So I get that. I get that. But what I would say is this. We need to have a real conversation about the availability of 3 guys moving forward. Terry McLaurin, Noah Brown, and Brandon Coleman. 3 guys that did not participate. And I'll even take it a step further with Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, who you all have already started fitting for his gold jacket size. He's going to Canton. He didn't practice yesterday. He played in 1 preseason game and is already on the shelf. Is it precautionary? Who knows? Will he be back out there tomorrow? We'll see. But for everyone that was enamored by all the jump cuts and things of that nature, he was running fearless on Friday night. Anybody that's played at any level, especially at running back, and at any skill position spot, it takes getting hit and getting your bell rung one good time before that running style changes. Because all those jump cuts and stuff are cool. Imagine jump cutting in the hole, right? And then it's Edgerrin Cooper laying you out in week number two off of your jump cut because you're running with reckless abandon. I love me some Jakori Kroski-Merritt. I think you all got to see Friday night what we've been seeing in practice. There's just something different about this young man. But I'd be a fool not to all of a sudden be thinking about his durability moving forward. That's one of the most important battles for a running back. Think about why Brian Robinson Jr. last year, his production fell off, wasn't healthy. So if he's not healthy, how effective is he? As far as Terry McLaurin and Brandon Coleman and Noah Brown go, those are the guys I'm really talking about because I don't think Jakori Kroski-Merritt has any type of, you know, doubt about his availability for the opener. But as far as McLaurin, Noah Brown, and Brandon Coleman go, they need those three guys. The interior of this offensive line got their ass kicked yesterday. Talking about the guard-center-guard combo of Andrew Wiley, Tyler Biadasz, and Nick Allegretti. Two of those three guys were a part of that center or that guard-center-guard combo down the stretch last year when this traditional rushing attack totally fell off of a cliff. So the availability of Brandon Coleman moving forward is massive. And he's another guy. And I don't want to harp on it too much. I get it. It's football. Guys get nicked. And he was on the trainer's table a lot last year, right? So you hope that this is not something that is a trend for Brandon Coleman. But for all of the excitement we had about this Commanders offensive line, I have a totally different tone talking about that group if they have to be without Brandon Coleman to start. But more importantly, what stood out the most about yesterday and whose impact was missed the most, it was Terry McLaurin and Noah Brown. They cannot or have struggled to at this point. They've struggled to consistently make plays on the perimeter without those two in-house. There was a red zone period on Sunday. It's no Noah Brown, no Terry McLaurin. I don't think there was a completion for the first team offense. It was a bunch of drop passes. Now, when I say drops, I'm not talking about your traditional drop where it just hits a guy in the hands and he sells out. They need a contested catch guy. Now, maybe that's Zach Ertz to start the year if there's no Terry or no Noah Brown. But in practice, they have looked lifeless at times in the passing attack.
One thing I noticed is you don't really feel Noah Brown not being there unless Terry's not there as well. Because I remember at the end of last year, we found out that Noah Brown was going to be out the rest of the year. You think to yourself, well, that's not good. You don't love to see that at all. But I feel like they didn't miss him too much. I know they had other guys that stepped up. Who could have imagined you would beat the Philadelphia Eagles because you got two touchdowns out of Zacchaeus and Jamison Crowder in the same, like, you would never expect that early on in the season. But now that you don't have Terry McLaurin as the kind of the security blanket on the side, now you really realize, damn, Noah Brown was really effective and valuable to this team at this point.
100%. And where you're really feeling him right now, on a good offense, like, he's not your number two. In an ideal situation, he's your third wide receiver. When you're without Terry McLaurin, he elevates to wide receiver one. I don't think we view Debo as a traditional wideout, and I think that conversation needs to shift as well. Every practice that I've been out there, him and Jayden Daniels have hooked up on a deep shot. The rapport of those two is like Montana to Rice, right? It's Brunell to Moss. Like they've got that type of synergy together. So I do want to give Debo credit for having a tremendous training camp to this point. Speaking of that, there were two times yesterday in which this offense had an opportunity to strike deep. They missed them both. One play, Debo Samuel's sick release off of the line of scrimmage versus Mikey Samristil, but there's pressure on Jayden Daniels, and I think that's what led to an overthrow. It's an incompletion. Jalen Lane got behind Trey Amos, Now, he didn't get too far behind Trey Amos because, I mean, he was in pretty good coverage, but Jayton throws a perfect pass, right? And it goes right through the breadbasket of Jalen Lane, not even tipped by Trey Amos. So there's some consistency missing from that room. I have questions about that room. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll take a deeper look at Terry McLaurin. He was out on the practice field yesterday in Ashburn for the first time all training camp while a practice was going on. What does it mean? I'll tell you my thoughts on that next. one 800 636 1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. Taking you up to 10 o'clock. Chris Russell going to join us in about a half hour from now. At about 9:15, Odyssey NFL insider Jason Lockenfora going to join us. Also writes for the Washington Post. As plugged in of a guy as you'll hear around the National Football League. We had him on prior to the start of training camp. And he was pretty concrete in his assessment, pretty steadfast in his assessment that it's ridiculous that Washington hadn't gotten something done with Terry McLaurin at this point. Now that we're a couple of weeks into camp, eager to hear what Jason Lockenfora is hearing around the NFL on the Terry McLaurin front, and then his personal thoughts on why this deal ultimately isn't done. Also, what do you hear from our pal Laramie Tunsil coming up here soon as well. So that'll be something that we'll play for you too. I got the chance to bury the hatchet and catch up with our guy, Laramie Tunsil. And you all should know this. Anybody that thought there was some major beef or gripe or issue with myself and Laramie Tunsil, I just don't think you understand the landscape of the NFL and NFL media, for that matter, right? Like, look, we are grown professionals. Laramie's a grown man. I'm a grown man. I talk to him almost every day after practice. So those of you on social media wondering, did he body slam me or not, stay tuned to the show. You'll hear the interview and find that out. I mentioned yesterday, out there, boots on the ground in Ashburn. I'll be back there tomorrow for the 11:30 practice. And yesterday during practice, our own Grant Paulson doing the Lord's work, catching Terry McLaurin, who was honestly trying to go incognito. They caught Terry McLaurin in a hoodie, trying to look discreet, but he was talking to general manager Adam Peters. It was the first time that Terry McLaurin has been on the practice field during a practice session. Now, Ben, you said this earlier, and I think it was a very studious point that I did not think of. We'll see tomorrow. There are no fans in attendance tomorrow. There were no fans in attendance for the Burgundy and Gold scrimmage. Is that why we saw Terry McLaurin? Is that the reason why we saw Terry? Because there was no fans, and he just wasn't trying to be a distraction the past couple of weeks? That's going to be interesting to find out. We'll get some more word on that tomorrow. But what does it mean that Terry was out on the practice field and having public dialogue with Adam Peters? What does it mean? At first blush, I'm like, it means nothing. Nothing, Berger. It ultimately may be that. But I do think, you know, and maybe this is me being a little bit of a cynic, fishing for the drama, but I think they're very smart about the optics of the situation. We've continued to hear from Jeremy Fowler, Peter Schrager, who we'll let you hear from in a little bit, that the relationship between Washington and the team is fractured. Or excuse me, that the relationship between Washington and McLaurin is fractured. It ain't all peaches and cream is the best way that I could put it. And I think them coming out and speaking publicly to each other throws a little bit of water on that fire. That's the first thing that I thought. The other thing is this. Maybe they're getting closer to a deal getting done. Maybe they're getting closer to burying this thing. Maybe they're getting close. But I still continue to believe, and I got John Keim of ESPN put out a piece earlier today highlighting where things currently stand. According to John Keim, both sides have remained firm in their stance. There is no movement on the Terry McLaurin front. Things have not changed. Despite the trade request, despite him actually showing up to the facility, despite us seeing him and AP talk yesterday, despite him hugging it out with Josh Harris, still not a whole lot of clarity, not a whole lot of movement, rather, on this situation. John Keim earlier this morning, put out a piece titled, this was a good caption for my guy Keim. I may text him over this. Write a check why Terry McLaurin and Commanders can't get a deal done. And throughout this piece, he did such a nice job illustrating where things currently stand. The piece of this article that has made the rounds on social media is this quote right here. John Keim said that one leak source said he could see the Commanders eventually agreeing to pay McLaurin $28 million per. But would that be enough? Keim also went on to say, according to various reports and multiple sources, DK Metcalf's contract has served as a guide for McLaurin. Though whether that's in terms of the average annual salary, which is $33 million, or the total guarantees, which is $60, that remains unclear. A lot to unpack with that. So Terry is using the DK deal as like a parameter for his negotiations. How he's using it is the big question. I think yesterday we saw a little bit more leverage for Terry McLaurin as well. And maybe, you know, it's because Noah Brown's not out there too is why it looks so bad. I continue to say it, man. They look anemic. Anemic at times offensively in camp, in the passing game, without McLaurin, without Noah Brown. They do not have enough professional wide receivers on this roster to compete at a high level to me during the regular season if they're going to be without Terry and without Noah Brown for portions of the season. And that's where we're at right now. I've continued to say, I think there's a 65% chance that he gets a deal done here and he plays in the opener in week one. To me, there's a 35% chance that he is not under contract, is not on the field, rather, for the opener in week one against the Giants. And I'll take it out on a further limb than this. If Terry McLaurin has to miss the opener in week one against the Giants, I'd have a difficult time picking them to win. I would. Based off of how this offense is looking in camp without Terry, without Noah Brown, if they both have to miss the opener. And here's the other thing, too. Like, Noah Brown, in his availability, his health, is not being talked about enough. I said it, you know, to somebody off the record. Maybe it's just the placebo effect. Knowing that he's hurt, watching him walk off the practice field yesterday, damn sure looked like he had a little bit of a limp. So I'm now starting to wonder, well, how certain is it that he is going to be available for the opener? Have some doubts there. If Terry McLaurin has to miss the opener and Noah Brown has to miss the opener, I'm telling you, I'd have a major, major problem picking them to win versus the New York Giants. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back Monday. ESPN NFL insider Jeremy Fowler joined Grant and Danny, and he gave a percentage chance that McLaurin will miss the opener against the New York Giants. We'll hear from Jeremy Fowler next.